continue with this for about 45 to an hour. Now see how you feel if you want to continue with it, because there's a tremendous amount of literature, both in English and in Persian. So some of these books are in Persian. Don't mind me if I open it this way or that way, because they are in two directions. And some of which you have been translated, some of which has not been translated as far as the history and literature. Of course, tremendous amount of literature, including the tablets of Baha'u'llah. There's so many of them that even have not been published. They're in the archive building in the International Archive in Haifa. But to just give you a brief description of what the Guardian went through to write a book, God Passes By, in a short period of a year and a half, and an investigation of 2 years, where the Rumi Khanum relates to us that he did that just before the centenary, before 1944, and a tremendous amount of writings. There are two chapters on Baha'u'llah's banishment to Iraq, which we relate some of the incidents here tonight, but it's for you to go and read these two chapters at your convenience tomorrow, while you're in this camp, if you have the time. But be sure to read these two chapters, beginning page 108, 107 to 160, roughly, Baha'u'llah's mission is described by the Guardian. There's two chapters by the Guardian in this God Passes By about Baha'u'llah's banishment to Iraq, the incident that took place in Baghdad, and aside from that, The Chosen Highway, for those of you who love this book, I'm sure you fall in love the minute you read a couple of pages at the beginning, and then you really want to never let this book go away from your hand. And whenever my sister visits me, my books disappear, so I have been borrowing Chosen Highway from here this evening. But that's family affairs, and I think what I'd like to describe here, and start this, I hope the speakers last night, or this series of speaking, brought you, as far as the history concerned, where Baha'u'llah arrived in Baghdad. Was this covered last night by the speakers? It was. Fine. Then we see that on January 12th, 1853, Baha'u'llah started from Tehran with escort of the Persian government, the army escort, and also the escort from the Russian embassy in the case of protection of Baha'u'llah and his family, that they might not kill him on the way, destroy him and his family. So the escort was with Baha'u'llah. And his family, his children were at the age of 9, nine. And greatest Tolili at the age of 6. And the purest branch, Mirza Mehdi, that last week we celebrated the 100th anniversary of his martyrdom, was 3 years old. But because Mr. Mehdi was raised very young, he was left in the city of Tehran with the family of Baha'u'llah. And so Baha'u'llah, with his two children and his wife, very devoted, and we read in Chosen Highway that this wife was from a very noble family, was the only daughter of a merchant, and she had every reason to disown Baha'u'llah, to divorce him, to let him go, because who wants this kind of tribulation? But a tremendous devotion for over 40 years. Nawab, the wife of Baha'u'llah, sold her belongings on the way from Tehran, including the jewelry of her clothes that we read, that she sold and bought food and bread, and it took them over 3 months. On April 8, 1853, Baha'u'llah and his family arrived in Baghdad, very poor, not knowing anybody in the city, and I'm sure the language must have been a tremendous difficulty for the family, because none of them spoke Arabic. Were in Baghdad, the language that was spoken was Arabic. Up to now, Baha'u'llah has been known as the leader of the Babis. The Babis has a tremendous attraction to him. There had been two or three tablets, glimpse of the writings of Baha'u'llah in the hand of the Babis, the followers. And of course the incident of Badasht that attracted many Babis and aroused the curiosity of many, the immensity, the greatness of this personage of Baha'u'llah. But still, due to the, you might call it an agreement between Baha'u'llah and the Bab, whether it was a meeting place in Tehran or not, this is debatable historically, for the protection of the cause, for the protection of Baha'u'llah, until the right time, the agreement between the Bab and Baha'u'llah was that Baha'u'llah's half-brother, Azal, to be appointed more or less a leader of the Babis, as the successor to the Bab for the time being, until the time comes when the year 9 and the year 19 in 1863 arrives and Baha'u'llah's mission is supposed to be revealed, and then the cause would be protected by them. But this situation, though it was an agreement in writing and more or less a spiritual agreement that this takes place, Azal, with the help of a certain Sayyid Muhammad, he was a clergyman from Isfahan who had become a Babi in Baghdad. He lived in Qazimain, 3-4 miles north of Baghdad. Aroused Azal, the half-brother of Baha'u'llah, that he is somebody. He is, after all these tablets, all these writings of the Bab referring to him, that he's the morn of eternity and so on, that he should stay on his 2 feet and stop Baha'u'llah of becoming such a magnet, so much power, and so many people attracted. Though Baha'u'llah was not seeking this, rather Babis and many, many people from all walks of life in Baghdad were attracted to him, one by one. Hearing about his message, his writings, his thoughts, they would come to his home all day, all night, until the late hours of the night, they would be around him. They wouldn't leave him. And Babis from all over Persia sold their belongings, because the Babi faith in Persia at that time, right after the great persecution of the Bab and the persecution, the mass persecution of the Babis throughout Persia, was more or less without leadership. And the faith was dying out to a point that in many cities like in Qazvin, the Babi faith had started dividing to 4 branches. And there were well over 25, according to God passes by, individuals who wanted to do something for the Babi faith. They were ardent believers. And they were very anxious. The year 1853 came, and Baha'u'llah, the promised one, the one whom God will manifest according to the Bab's writing, had not appeared, visibly. So they decided to claim that they are the one whom God will manifest. So there were 25 people all over the country of Iran and Iraq, including Nabil, claiming that they are the manifestation of God in order to fulfill this prophecy of the Bab. Some of them were very sincere, and some of them, like Azal and others, were not. They were just trying to take over the faith on their own. But Nabil, after one interview with Baha'u'llah, he asked for forgiveness and pleaded with Baha'u'llah to forgive him. And he told Baha'u'llah why he was doing it, because he was worried about the faith. He was worried that the leadership goes away and the Babi faith would be dissolved. After a year or so in Baghdad, they problems of Azal and his few followers, the Sayyid Muhammad, had created for Baha'u'llah so much and his followers that a cousin of the Bab, who was a devoted believer of the Babi faith, to this point, as we realize, they weren't Baha'is. The Baha'i faith had not, in other words, had not started. It's the Babi faith. All are Babis. Baha'u'llah, including Baha'u'llah himself, is a Babi. That the cousin of the Bab is killed by this Sayyid Muhammad instigation at night in order to destroy any indication that a very close relative of the Bab is attracted to Baha'u'llah. In other words, Sayyid Muhammad and Azal were trying to destroy every evidence that they could get, the authenticity of Baha'u'llah's mission, Baha'u'llah's authority as to be the manifestation of God. And this incident and many others similar to this that created so much disunity that Baha'u'llah one evening, without telling any soul, without telling his relatives, you know, you want to go out of the house, you say goodbye to your family, relatives. You want to go out of town, you call everybody, including your bankers and everybody that you're going out, and you say goodbye. But Baha'u'llah left in the town with one of his servants, who was a Muslim, and he paid him some money to become, act as a merchant, because they wanted to go in disguise. Nobody knew their name. Baha'u'llah changed his name to Sheikh Muhammad, that he relates Darwish Muhammad. Thank you very much. Darwish Muhammad, but the attendant of Baha'u'llah got killed on the way. The robbers came and took all his money and killed him. Baha'u'llah was left without anybody, and he walked most of the way, all the way from Baghdad to Suleymaniyye, to the mountain of Sargalu, where he stayed in this cave. The guardian says, suddenly and without informing anyone, even among the members of his own family, on the 12th of Rajab, April 10, 1854, just about a year later, he departed accompanied by an attendant, a Mohammedan named Abu Ghassim Hamadani, to whom he gave a sum of money, instructing him to act as a merchant and use it for his own purpose. Shortly after, that servant was attacked by thieves and killed, and Baha'u'llah was left entirely alone, wandering throughout the waste of Khorasan, a region whose sturdy and warlike people were known for their age-long hostility to the Persians, whom they regarded as seditious from the faith of Islam, and from whom they differed in their outlook, race, and language. Baha'u'llah, while in this cave of Sargalu and Suleymaniyye for a period of 2 years, he revealed some tablets later on that talks about this incident. Baha'u'llah says, I roamed the wilderness of resignation in the Lohi Maryam. Maryam was the sister-in-law of Baha'u'llah, who was very attracted to Baha'u'llah, devoted to Baha'u'llah's family. Traveling in such wise that in my exile every eye wept sore over me, and all created things shed tears of blood because of my anguish. The birds of the air were my companions, and the beasts of the field my associates. From my eyes, he's referring in the Kitab Igan, the Book of Certitude, there rained tears of anguish, and in my bleeding heart stirred an ocean of agonizing pain. Many a night I had no food for sustenance, and many a day my body found no rest. Alone I communed with my spirit, oblivious of the world and all that is there. In the Odes he revealed Vilas wrapped in his devotion during those days of utter seclusion, and in the prayers and soliloquies, which in verse and prose, both in Arabic and Persian, pour from his sorrow-laden soul, many of which he had wont to chant aloud to himself at dawn and during the watch of the night. He lauded the names and attributes of his creator, extolling the glories and mysteries of his own revelation, sang the praise of that maiden, that personified the Spirit of God within him, dwelleth on his loneliness and his past and future tribulation, expatiated upon the blindness of his generation, the perfidy of his friends, and the perversity of his enemies, affirmed his determination to arise and, if need be, offer up his life for the vindication of his cause, stress those essential prerequisites which every seeker after truth must possess. Baha'u'llah was still pursuing his solitary existence on that mountain when a certain sheikh, a resident of Sulaymaniyah, who owned a property in the neighborhood, sought him out, as directed in a dream he had of the Prophet Muhammad. Shortly after this contact was established, Sheikh Islam, the leader of the Khalidiyyah order, who lived in Sulaymaniyyah, visited him and succeeded, after repeated requests, in obtaining his consent to transfer his residence to that town. Meantime, his friends in Baghdad had discovered his whereabouts and had dispatched Sheikh Sultan, the father-in-law of Agha Kalim. Agha Kalim was brother of Baha'u'llah, and Sheikh Sultan, his father-in-law, who was a devoted Baha'i later on, to beg him to return. And it was now, while he was living in Sulaymaniyyah, in a room belonging to the Takiyyah Mawlana Khalid, that the messenger arrived. I found the same Sheikh Sultan recounting his experience to Nabil, as I stated, quote, all those who lived with him in that place, from their master down to the humblest neophyte, so enamored of and carried away by the love for Baha'u'llah, and so unprepared to contemplate the possibility of his departure, that I felt certain that were I to inform them of the purpose of my visit, they would not have hesitated to put an end to my life. So Baha'u'llah had a tremendous number of followers gathered in Sulaymaniyyah, mostly of Shafi, of Sunnis, from all that region, and they believed that he was the return of the master that they had been expecting for. And there were certain poetry by Sheikh Muhyiddin, who was a great philosopher, writer, a clergyman of the Islam, the Sunni sect, of 500-600 years, that not very many people could understand, could repeat, could translate, could interpret these writings. Baha'u'llah, upon request, though he hadn't seen before, as he testified to them, that he had not seen their books, the book of Sheikh Muhyiddin, he wrote certain poetry in the very language of that master. And so this enhanced the belief of these people in Baha'u'llah's greatness. Later, after Sheikh Sultan arrived and pleaded with Baha'u'llah to return, Baha'u'llah returns to Baghdad, and his only reason for returning is not for his own sake or for his family, but for the sake of the faith, for bringing the unity of the faith, for reviving the Babi faith. Is this getting late or are we going to do it? Okay.
Oh, okay, fine.
Sure. Now, Baha'u'llah's return in Baghdad marks another point in the history of the cause. As far as the journey of Baha'u'llah, the stay of Baha'u'llah in Baghdad for 11-12 years, this marks, in other words, the history of Baha'u'llah in Baghdad before Sulaymaniyya is different than that after the return. It's a different story. It's a different... Here's, again, the personage of Baha'u'llah after 2 years of resignation of the world completely, to a point that he had nothing in the world, nothing whatsoever. He had no inclination of worldly desire that this return take place. While in Baghdad, I want to give you this two items. While in Sulaymaniyya and before Sulaymaniyya, Baha'u'llah revealed 3 tablets and many more writings that we don't have record of, too many of them. One of them is the tablet of Kullukam, which in God passes by page 116 again. The Guardian referred to this tablet. In Sulaymaniyya, they, for the Persian pronunciation, Qaside Ezvarbayye, which again on page 123 of God Passes By, this is recorded, that this poetry, which is very beautiful, and it describes the immensity of the future of the faith. Baha'u'llah, for example, in this poetry says, if God allows him, if he revealed one word, the whole universe would expire of the greatness of God. If God allowed him to say one word, one sentence, the greatness, what God is, everyone would, the whole life would stop, because they realize what it is. After return, while we are in the literature, after return from Baghdad, there were many, many Babis and many officials, friends, and people of high ranking of different governments, especially from Persia and from the Turkish Empire, residing in Baghdad. One of them was banished by the Persian government, and he was an exile in Baghdad. He was a great personage. They begin to read and hear about Baha'u'llah. And at the same time, Ezel, while Baha'u'llah is absent for these 2 years, had been trying to establish himself, but Baha'u'llah had left. And he's the sole successor of the Baal. And so many of these people who are trying to find out what it's all about have been referring problems, interpretations of different chapters of the Quran or of the writings of the Baal to Ezel and asking him for a commentary. And when they read Ezel's commentary after many months of waiting and whatnot, they are disillusioned. They say, well, what is all this all about? Why these people are giving their life for? I mean, this is a bit of... The arrival of Baha'u'llah and the request of many of these, again from Baha'u'llah, and his answer are a tremendous difference, a vast difference, that if you knew Persian or Arabic language and you read these two, the writings of Ezel on the same subject in Baha'u'llah, really, there's no comparison. A child would write better than this half God. Crazy, you know. But among these people, one of them is the uncle of the Bab, who is not a Bab yet, who is traveling with another cousin of the Bab to Baghdad. Baghdad was a Muslim holy place. And they request they're leaving in 2 or 3 days to go back to Shiraz. Baha'u'llah hear about the arrival in Baghdad very late. And so they have certain questions about the different prophets, about the message, about the proof of prophets. In over 2 nights and 2 days, Baha'u'llah revealed the Kitab-i Idam, the Book of Certitude, a tremendous book that in the annal, in the history of religion, never yet, never will be practical accident. Well, who knows the future? But never has been a tremendous and most powerful book revealed in such a short period of time the proof of the Prophet by himself. It never had been before. Historians, many clergymen after the passing or the death of Muhammad, or the passing or the crucifixion of Christ and Moses and so on, have written long things about the proof of the Prophet. But never before a Prophet of God had written. This tablet or Book of Certitude was revealed right after the arrival from Sulaymaniyya. The Book of then the hidden words of Baha'u'llah, both Arabic and Persian, were also revealed during this time, right after the arrival from Sulaymaniyya. Now, Book of hidden words were revealed, as we know, as we heard time and time again, that Baha'u'llah would get up very early in the morning while he was walking on the bank of River Yafra, that he would reveal, and as it would come to him, he would write on the piece of paper. And though for those of you who made your pilgrimage, God will in you go if you haven't. When you visit the archive building, you'll see a frame, and this hidden words, both in Arabic and Persian, beautiful handwriting of Baha'u'llah, written on different directions. For example, if you have this book, I think this is a paper about twice the size of this paper. Baha'u'llah wrote, for example, in this corner, one passage of the hidden words, and then another one here, another one there, and so on. All over the page he has written, and it's folded, and so you could see there a smudge and everything of Baha'u'llah's own handwriting. Okay, what beautiful handwriting. I want to refer to this because then at the same place in the archive building you see some of the handwritings of Baha'u'llah after Adrianople, where he was poisoned by his half-brother Azal twice. His hand would shake for the rest of his life, and his handwritings and everything goes really as far as he wasn't able to write. His handwriting is scribbled very, very fast and shakes very badly. The Book of Four Valleys and Seven Valleys was revealed there. The tablet of Mariner, Holy Mariner, was revealed at this in 1863, just before the Declaration of Baha'u'llah. Tablet of Huriye, which is referred in God Passes By, page 140. Also, tablets of unity, city of unity. Tablet to Tabitha Maryam, the sister-in-law of Baha'u'llah, Nawab's sister. There's a tremendous tablet by itself. Some portion of it had been translated and it's in the writings in English, but the majority of it is not. And it shows the immensity of this faith, the greatness. Baha'u'llah has referred to this in the tablet that this very head, Baha'u'llah says, because Maryam is very worried about the life of Baha'u'llah. She cries, she moans, she writes letters to him constantly, pleading with him to take care of himself, at least for the sake of family and so on, for his comfort. And Baha'u'llah says this very head was once at the hand of the brothers, referring to Joseph, and there were two of them in the well. and at another time in the cross at the hand of the Romans, and at another time it was in Karbala at the hand of Shemr, the archenemy of Hussein. And he refers that this had repeated itself several times, refers to his own body more or less, that this went through several times of this sacrificial. Now, there is an incident takes place in Baghdad which is very unique, and I feel that it's very important, especially to the Persian believers, because in most Persian homes, if you go, they have, in Persia, they have written this in beautiful calligraphy and hung it more or less like the greatest name in their houses. And this poetry has been translated in Chosen Highland. There were many, many people now coming to Baha'u'llah. Whether they wanted to seek power, they wanted to get advice, there were politicians, there were clergymen, there were scientists, there were all walks of life would come to Baha'u'llah for advice. And there were many people who, there were politicians like the Turkish government also was after Baha'u'llah to see if there is a possibility of getting him to go back to Persia and take over the country, revolutionary. In other words, overthrow the other country. And they were coming with discussions of money and whatnot, quite a bit of things going on. There was a clergyman, his name was Mirza Muhit. And this man was not a sincere person. At the same time, he wanted to show to Baha'u'llah that he was sincere. He had an interest, he was an intellectual man. But to his followers outside, he didn't want to show that he had any relationship with Baha'u'llah, because his followers knew that he was going for help to Baha'u'llah. He would lose his power. People would flock to Baha'u'llah and give up his authority. And so he requested Baha'u'llah through another Baha'i for an interview, a secret interview, midnight, to have a visit with Baha'u'llah. And Baha'u'llah, referring to him, wrote him a poetry, which in Persian, I'm sure when I read this in English, those of Persian will know what the Persian over there. Baha'u'llah says to this man in this tablet, "When I was in the wilderness of Kurdistan, I composed this poem. If thou hast in thine heart one desire for thy life, then come and not hither. But shouldest thou be prepared to sacrifice soul and heart and life, come and bring others. Such is the path if thou desire to enter the kingdom of light. If thou art not of those able to walk this path, be gone and trouble us not." So the clergyman knew his answer, never showed up, never came. He stayed away. But at least one thing became clear to him and to many believers and many people, that you really are for it, come. Otherwise, if you're half and half, don't bomb, don't come. And this is the attitude towards the faith. No matter how much the tribulation, no matter how much the struggle of life, ups and downs, poor and rich, that we do not give up or distract from what Baha'u'llah's message is, or what the plans are. I don't know what you're going to. Are you guys getting tired, huh? You're not? Oh God, for that prayer. You are. You always are. That's a relative. Another tablet was revealed by Baha'u'llah, which is known as Loh-e Shakar-Shikan. Shakar-Shikan means cutting sugar. And it's magnificent poetry. But a tremendous tablet in this sense that literally, as far as the Persian and Arabic literature is concerned, when the non-Baha'is read this, they get a fantastic sensation as far as the literature itself, regardless of what the message is. You know, they don't believe in Baha'u'llah, they might hate Baha'u'llah, but the message itself, the literature itself attracts them, changes them from, in other words, it makes them to inquire who the writer was. In this tablet, I want to talk a little about this tablet, because this tablet also was revealed one just prior to 1863, prior to the creation of Baha'u'llah in Baghdad. There is the Council General of Persia, who is very jealous, and he sees everybody comes to town, every mayor, every official, the Turkish government, or anybody comes to town, they always inquire about Baha'u'llah. And he is the general council of a great government to him. Nobody bothers. And so he gets mad and upset and tries to write letters, and he writes letters, quite a few letters, to the Shah of Iran, to the Sultan of Turkey, saying that Baha'u'llah is gathering momentum of power to attack any day. Be prepared. And in fact, he suggests, which is really shows you the brightness of this great council, Persian councillor. He suggests that because Baha'u'llah is always with his followers and they're always devoted to him, they are there and they can't do very much. The Turkish government and the Persian government at the time didn't see eye to eye. Why not bring 200 soldiers from Persia in discreet? They arrive in Baghdad and they get equipped, and at night they attack Baha'u'llah's home and capture Baha'u'llah and take him into the country through the border and will kill him off, and that would be the end of the Babites. And this was his letter to the Shah of Iran suggesting such a thing. And there were many other things, that plans and things that was going on to do away with Baha'u'llah, the personal Baha'u'llah. There is the consulate of Turkey in Baghdad, Mirza Hamid, Abdul Hamid Khan, it's a Persian, that's Arabic name, that who is a friend of Baha'u'llah, he is very attracted to Baha'u'llah's message. His family are related to Baha'u'llah's family, more or less they have a very good report. He writes the letters and pleads with Baha'u'llah to go and stay at his home, because his home was a consulate, and consulate in those countries is a place where nobody can, I mean, if a criminal goes to a consulate, nobody can harm that criminal unless he gets out of the consulate. It's a sanctuary. And he suggests that Baha'u'llah stays with his family for 3 months while this upheaval goes away, and then he could go back to normal life. Baha'u'llah revealed this tablet stating that the sincere believers desire trouble, desire hardship. This is the sustenance they get to grow, to go on. Without it, they cannot. They like it more than the milk of their mother. And in this very tablet, Baha'u'llah, referring to death, says that if a bird is captured in a cage, if the cage is broken, what is the worry of the bird? A whole vast space is open to the bird. Why should the bird worry about it? And he also says, if a fish in a boat, in a bowl, kept in a boat, and if the boat is sunk, thank you, what is the worry of the fish? Because the vast ocean opens to this fish. Baha'u'llah says, so it is. Our soul and our body is like that cage is like that ship. Our soul must never worry about this destruction of our physical body. They'll go on. And at the end of this tablet, Baha'u'llah says that unless the time comes, no one can harm, no one can change, alter anything God's plan. And he promises this individual who was in behind that God has a tremendous plan for this faith. He refers to, in this tablet, to the past history of other prophets of God, like Muhammad, that when the time became very bad, that Muhammad was really troubled by his enemies so much, and his enemies from outside and inside, that he asked God, I don't want to be a prophet of God, in the Quran. And God told him that, Muhammad, there is only two ways for you to resign from prophethood. He had no choice. One is to put a ladder to come to the sky. The other way is to dig a well and go down in the ground, disappear. That's the only two alternatives you have. Otherwise, you've got to be a prophet of God. There's no choice. Baha'u'llah says thousands of eyes must weep over this sentence of the prophet, who, without harming anybody, must go through such a tremendous amount of pressure to stay. To say, oh God, I want to resign from such a high station. Another tablet is the tablet of Nur. That was revealed in Baghdad. There are many. You know, there's about 50-60 pages of this book referring to those tablets, just indicating a passage or two from those tablets revealed in Baghdad prior to the declaration of Baha'u'llah. Now, in God passes by, the guardians relate that there was a Mirza Aghajan Khadim. He was given the title of Khadimullah, means the servant of the Lord, who became the eminence of the eminences, I still can't pronounce, thank you, eminences is the one who used to take pen and take down whatever revealed. This was the only thing. And then codify it back and forth and bring the clean write-up to the master or to the one who relates that. Well, more than a starter. It's a Persian administration of its own. What do you? Yes, lifetime job. Yeah. The man became right. And also he was the attendant of Baha'u'llah. He was the servant of Baha'u'llah. He was the most devoted servant of Baha'u'llah. I'll tell you a little about him later. Another couple of more minutes. Baha'u'llah in Baghdad, this Mirza Aghajan had been in Baghdad for a while. He had a dream of the Baal. The Baal tells him to go and see Baha'u'llah. So we go. He meets with Baha'u'llah. And he and Baha'u'llah have the interview. He decides to stay with Baha'u'llah for a few months. One evening, in fact, I like to read this because this is in God Passes By. According to the guardian, this Mirza Aghajan was the first one to believe in him. In other words, he was the first behind, if you want to have, though he didn't register or anything as far as cards concerned. Mirza Aghajan was the first behind. The first to believe in him David mentioned later as Khadimullah, servant of God. A Babi youth aflame with devotion, who under the influence of a dream he had of the Baal, and as a result of a perusal of certain writings of Baha'u'llah, had precipitately forsaken his home in Kashan and traveled to Iraq in the hope of attaining his presence, and who from then on served him for a period of 4 years in his triple function of amanuensis, companion, and attendant. To him, Baha'u'llah, more than to anyone else, was moved to disclose at this critical junction a glimpse of as yet unrevealed glory of his station. This same Mirza Agha Chan, recounting to Nabil his experience on that first and never to be forgotten night spent in Karbala, in the presence of his newly found beloved, who was then a guest of Haji Mirza Hassan Hakim Bashi, had given the following testimony. Now you might call this is the first public declaration of Baha'u'llah to another individual. That night, as it was summer time, Baha'u'llah was in the habit of passing his evening and of sleeping on the roof of the house. This was customary in Persia and still is. That night when he had gone to sleep, I, according to his direction, lay down for a brief rest at a distance of a few feet from him. No sooner had I risen and started to offer my prayers in a corner of the roof which adjoined the wall than I behold his blessed person rise and walk toward me. When he reached me, he said, "You too are awake." Whereupon he began to chant and pace back and forth. How shall I ever describe that voice and the verses it intoned? And his gait as he strode before me, methinks with every step he took and every word he uttered, thousands of oceans of light surged before my face, and thousands of words of incomparable splendor were unveiled to my eyes, and thousands of suns blazed their light upon me. In the moonlight that streamed upon him, he thus continued to walk and to chant. Every time he approached me, he would pause and in a tone so wondrous that no tongue can describe it, would say, "Hear me, my son, by God the True One, this cause will assuredly be made manifest. Heed thou not the idle talk of the people of the Bayan, who pervert the meaning of every word." In this manner he continued to walk and chant, and to address me these words until the first stage of dawn appeared. Afterwards, I removed his bedding to his room, and having prepared his tea for him, was dismissed from his presence. I leave the rest of it as far as the declaration of Baha'u'llah in Baghdad just before the departure to Adrianople to Istanbul to you for your perusal. I mean, there's not very much time to go through that. You have heard it, you read it, and these two chapters that I refer to in God Passes By eloquently describe that what took place. But the banishment of Baha'u'llah from Baghdad was not a banishment in this sense, that it wasn't a cruel banishment that, like the Persian government imposed on him in 10 days he had to evacuate and leave the country through the middle of the winter, the snow and the 400, 500 miles walk practically from the high passes of Hamadan and Kermanshah. But this was an invitation, because the government of Persia and the Sultan of Turkey, as I said, they weren't seeing eye to eye. At the same time, the request was made by the Shah of Iran from the Sultan of Turkey that Baha'u'llah to be removed away from the border city, because they were afraid that he might gain momentum of people and uprise and take over the country, attack. And so this was an invitation. And at the same time, the Sultan of Turkey was going to inquire and find out if this is a potential for him to have somebody like Baha'u'llah in mind to send with army back to Persia to take over. So they sent him an invitation to come to be at the, to meet with the Sultan. But the corruptions and the terrible shape that the Sultan court and the corrupt viziers were, this meeting did not take place. And Baha'u'llah, when he arrived in Adrianople, he did not go around to visit the mayor and the officials as it was used to, customary. When an official of another town came, he used to go to his house call, because Baha'u'llah was not a politician. And besides, Baha'u'llah's station was far greater than the station of any officials there. The station of the Prophet. How could he go door to door trying to politics? But they expected this from him. And so this turned them off. And the mischievous deeds of his half-brother, writing letters to the Sultan, to the Viziers, that Baha'u'llah has different intentions, he wants to take over the Sultanate here, that caused the banishment from there to Istanbul, to Acre, and so on. Just before leaving Baghdad, one of the believers, this is an incident that took place, one of the believers brought his son with him, who was a youth, a child of 7 or 8, who was very devoted to Baha'u'llah, to offer him as a sacrifice so Baha'u'llah would not leave. This youth stood at the door of Baha'u'llah's house before his departure from the city, fell with his father on the feet of Baha'u'llah, pleading with Baha'u'llah, grabbing the garment of Baha'u'llah, asking, pleading with him not to go, not to go away from the city. But Baha'u'llah left, and God passes by states that in after the 12th day in Jezbon, before his departure, the believers gathered together and bought a steed, a very good horse, for Baha'u'llah to ride on his journey with his followers there, the few that left before him to prepare the way, and the few who went with him. The community that grew in Baghdad, one by one, the believers that came from all over the country of Persia, that had lost their families, their brothers, their sisters, their mothers, their fathers, through persecutions, now they have found a home. The gatherings of the believers in Baghdad, according to God Passes By, was such that through the history of the faith, the mission of Baha'u'llah from its inception through the end in 1892, through the passing of Baha'u'llah, never seen a fantastic height, a serenity, a happiness afterward either. In other words, this gathering of the believers around Baha'u'llah, that they would come to his home, that according to Nabil's narrative, that when they leave, they had, the believers were very poor. They had one cloak, one sandal. In those days, it was customary to take off the shoes when you arrived. They were so entranced, so enchanted, so spirited, late, late night, when they would leave, they didn't know whose shoes they were wearing, whose clothes they were taking. Because they were out of this world. They were cloud nine with smoke. And this went day and day out. People would walk from dawn to dusk at the home of Baha'u'llah to be in his presence. This unity was created. And Baha'u'llah in his writings, in his tablet, always wished, always pray that the believers, wherever they get together, to create this kind of atmosphere. That they love one another and they have this support. Okay, I think this is about it, no? I would entertain questions later if you want to take a break or not. You know, one of the things is, as I said at the beginning, this event, this 12 years in Baghdad, is so much, you really cannot cover it in 1 hour, 2 hours. It's really unjust. So I refer you to these two books that you have, Chosen Highway, God Passes By, and the Book of Certitude, the Epistle to the Son of the Wolf. There are chapters and places that refers to this. Then there are books like the Epistle of the Bomb by Professor Edward Brown relate to this area to some extent. Professor Edward Brown's also in his writing relates some of this chapter of the history of the faith. But this was the beginning. Before the Declaration of Baha'u'llah, you read the hidden words. All this are the beginning, the laying the foundation of this faith. Though outwardly Baha'u'llah was not a declared manifestation of God. In other words, he did not tell everybody that he was Baha'u'llah, that he was the manifestation of God. Many, many, many people knew and had an indication, but they weren't sure. And